June 4th, 2012. First thing I'm going to do is we have new youth and governance there. I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves, and we're going to introduce ourselves to you also.
Okay, well, I'm Jimmy Joling, and I'm a junior at Bradford High School right now.
I'm Ashley Schneider, and I'm a junior at Harborside Academy.
Gabe will go this way.
Gabe Luda, district supervisor. Mike Skolinski, District 19, supervisor.
Rick Dodge, 5th District, that's in the city, supervisor.
Dennis Elrod, I'm the 23rd, switch me, yeah, 23rd District, I'm the chairman of the committee.
Kupfer?
Oh, Jim Kupfer, and I'm the Public Works CFO.
John Rudy, General Manager of the Parks Division.
Ray Arbit, the Director of the Public Works Department.
And I'm Dan Dreyer, General Manager of the Golf Division.
And you'll see at your next meetings, you'll have Gary Sisman, who is a Highway Department Commissioner, Highway Commissioner. He's at a summer highway meeting this evening up at the Dells at Chula Vista.
Yeah.
Yeah,
those highway guys.
They have a hard time tonight.
We got an invitation yesterday.
What's that?
We got an invitation.
Oh, you? Oh,
but I got mine yesterday.
I got mine today.
Today, really?
Oh, I could have gone.
Must be getting mine tomorrow.
Yeah.
But Chula Vista is nice. Yeah. So we'll call the meeting to order. Roll call. We have a quorum. Well, we have Supervisor Nolan here now. Supervisor Dodge. Supervisor Skolinski. Gabe Luda. Supervisor Elrod. So, who are we missing?
We have five. For the committee, there's five. There's a few other administrators missing. Ron's gone. Frank's gone.
And we have our youth and governance. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. Everyone received the minutes in their packet. Do we have a motion to approve those?
I make a motion.
Motion by Supervisor Skolinski. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Nudo. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Chairman, committee members, supervisors, youth and governance comments. For the youth and governance and for new members, we had a what we call a hard copy of the Highway KD park plan. That's the red one that you've got there. What we did 10 years ago was purchase a piece of property that was a little gravel pit. It's been refurbished, reclaimed to a point. We have hiking trails, and it's now open for fishing. We had a plan done by a park planning company. And what we're doing as a committee now, and it's probably going to take 10 years to decide where we're headed with that plan, priorities. So we want you to read through that thing. The old committee was going through this at a level, like I said, of priorities, what we want to address, what we think we can afford. Right now, we're affording it with just having someone go out there and empty the trash can. But it's a long-term plan. And at our next meeting, we're going to start doing what we did three meetings ago, taking about 20 minutes per meeting and going through this thing and seeing what the committee thinks, what we're going to recommend. So I want you to, you know, read through that, see what you think, and see where we go from there. The other item, the only other item I have tonight to comment on, we lost a long-term employee of Kenosha County this weekend. He was our paving foreman, Ken Pedges. You may have seen it in the Kenosha News. He was killed in a single car accident on Friday evening, just north of Paddock Lake. And Ken was, as I said, a long-term employee. Our family here at Kenosha County is going to suffer, and also our highway department, because he was our paving foreman, and paving season is is just beginning. On a personal note, he's a long-term family friend of my family, and his services are going to be tomorrow evening in Burlington, I think, at Daniels.
The visitation tomorrow, yep.
Visitation.
Yep.
Tomorrow evening at Daniels for funeral. Mm-hmm. So, that's something that's going to affect the county this summer, and definitely his fellow employees. I know Gary addressed them this morning, and I talked to some of them earlier in the weekend also. It's quite a shock going through. So, I'd like to take 30 seconds here to have a little silence and thank Ken for what he's done for the county. So then we can move on to committee members. Any committee member that would wish to comment on any matter.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Regarding Katie, obviously, last meeting we were voting on the application for another grant. Obviously, right. That affects the layout potentially that we have here.
Correct.
Do we want to wait until we have an answer on that, or are we going to start dissecting this as is of the original plan?
I think we can dissect it as is because it's such a large project.
Okay.
If we acquired that other land, it would be a difference in a roadway or something. But there's so many things, if you read through that, that they were recommending to us, from walk bridges over Highway KD to, and I think we as a committee, what I'd like us to do is to say, okay, we don't have any money. The dive team from Kenosha County wants to have a spot to practice. So that's what we can afford to do, get them a spot to put their dive boat in, with our highway department building the ramp and things. I mean, that's the way I look at it. We can't do the $22 million, dream wish that they had. So. And we are going to know by June 28th, I believe, right?
25th.
If we have that grant, for that other.
And the other question is, I probably have another one after that. With regards to dissecting this, do we want to logically handle it from front to back, as opposed to a happenstance, page 47, page 39, those kinds of things?
I think happenstance.
Okay.
Yeah. Whatever really tricks your, what pops into your mind.
And the only other question, because you bring up a great point, where with the loss of the individual that you know very well, is there a succession plan, or is there somebody in line? Obviously, there's very qualified individuals.
I'm sure there are.
Yeah, we had a meeting this morning, and we basically suspended paving operations for this week. We were in the middle of paving out at Brightondale, the cart paths. We suspended it for this week, and then we're deciding to. We're going to attempt to put someone in on an interim basis. We talked with Bob Riedel, the personnel director. We plan on having that decided by the end of the week, somebody that's going to be on the interim basis, and then we would start the actual formal process to replace Ken in that position, which we probably, in our system, the way it takes, it'll probably be 2 to 3 months. But at least in the meantime, there are a number of guys that have worked on that crew for quite a while that are pretty... very knowledgeable, very seasoned guys. So we've got a number of folks that we're going to talk to this week about an interim.
And a few of those qualified individuals, whether they're interim step in or not, are they going to be part of the group of individuals to be considered, or is it strictly outside? I would think you would be from the ranks.
The way the county system works is we have to address it as an inside move first. That's kind of stage one, so we have to give everybody an opportunity inside to make an application for it, and then we go through that process. And in the event we didn't find anybody that way, then we'd go outside. But yet, it's typically the way it's set up. We have to go inside first. So
great.
I think we've got a number of guys that will be qualified for it.
Any other supervisors, comments, questions? Youth and Governance, anything, questions this evening so far? But feel free to speak up your normal members of this committee. So as we're going through things this evening, you know, you just address the chairman and then you speak. So don't feel inhibited. Citizens' comments. Any citizens wish to address the committee would have up to 5 minutes. Any citizens' comments? Seeing none, we'll move on to facilities. Old business update, courthouse landscaping.
And I thought, rather than just give you guys verbal stuff, I had a little time before we put the packets out. I put together kind of a brief summary of each of the old projects that are still ongoing. Starting with the courthouse landscaping. If it's okay with the chairman, I'll just kind of skim through the right down the list. The courthouse landscaping lighting follow-up to last meeting. There was a number of questions regarding the cost estimates that we had. We got those cost estimates refined now. For just the landscape materials, the actual, I should say, for the plants themselves, that's estimated at $5,100. The landscape materials, sod, fertilizer, mulch, etc., about $47,000. So at this point, we're estimating the total project cost for $9,800 for the materials for it. And then we're actually going to get quotes from three places when we get to that point. We're going to deal with the lighting piece first. We've got that out for bids right now, the lighting installation, the actual electrical work for that. That closes next week on the 11th. The lights we did order, we got the single source approval through the county board, so we ordered those up. Those are due in June 26th. If all goes well, we'll do the lighting work pretty much in the month of July. And then weather dependent, if it's really smoking hot, we're not going to do the landscape work in August, obviously, but we'll put it off to September. But if it is a favorable, a mild August, then we might start the landscape work then and just get it done.
So right on that, I know in about 4.5 minutes that evening, I took that $15,000 figure and I said it was $9,400. And now we've got one for $9,800. So where did we get that $15,000? I'm just curious.
I think that Frank got that number from Mike Schrant, the facilities guy that's kind of the point guy. I think he swagged it. I don't think he took the time to itemize out. They've got itemized, I've got an actual, Frank left me a copy of it, I've got an itemized list of each individual plant and what the cost is. I don't think that was what, I'm certain that isn't what was put in the $15,000. That was kind
of. Plus they were dealing with Mariani, the most expensive landscape contractor in the state of Illinois.
And I might have misspoke that night, Doug. I don't know that Mike actually had gotten that quote from him.
Right.
But bottom line is that was a scientific wild. It wasn't.
Now we're going to deal with Kenosha County nurseries.
Three nurseries. Yeah, I think he's going to talk with the. I don't know the specific ones, but I'm sure it's going to be Breezy Hill, probably Swartz and Swartz. I'm thinking is what he's going to end up doing.
Yeah.
So we get three quotes and do it that way.
That's perfect. Yep.
63 Tower had some interesting developments on that. Met with the city, and as we talked at the last meeting, everybody shared some concerns about working with the city. I had a meeting with them 2 weeks ago now, and it was surprisingly amicable.
It won't take long.
Go ahead.
But for our youth and governance, could you explain what the 60th Street Tower, what we're doing?
Sure. If you guys can picture on 60th Street when you go into town, just east of Highway 31, probably driven by it a million times, you might not notice it, but on the north side of the road, there's a great big orange tower.
By L&L Meats.
Yeah, exactly. L&L Meats right across from, what's that saloon that everybody knows right across?
Highview,
exactly.
By the old Little League Park?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. The Little League Park's right behind there. There's a great big tower. Well, that tower has all of the primary communication links for all of the safety services in Kenosha, both city and county. It forms a relay to the tower that's out here for the Sheriff's Department and the county fire departments. And it also houses most of the key equipment for the KFD, the fire department in town, as well as the police department in town. And that tower is in a state of, we don't know the actual age. We had it structurally analyzed last year, and it's in a state of repair where it needs to be replaced. So we're starting to identify where we can put this thing, because there's a lot of limitations in terms of zoning ordinances and all airport ordinances and everything else. So that's kind of where we're at. We had identified a site right behind Shopko at 52nd Avenue and 50th Street as a possible site that's owned by the water utility. We focused on municipally owned land, thinking that we wouldn't have to purchase a piece of property then. It would be in everybody's best interest that we work with another unit of government. We actually, in looking at that lot further, it does have some limitations that require us to would require us to alter the design of the tower itself, because it's kind of a long, narrow lot. And we were initially looking at putting what's called a guy wire supported tower. You've seen them, like WLIP has one on Highway 31. Very tall, skinny tower, but there's guy wires that support it. Those towers are very efficient from a load standpoint because they're very thin. So they don't act as like a sail. You can load more on them than you can on a self-supporting tower like the one that's behind here or the one at 60th Street. So they're typically more economical to put up as long as you have enough land to put the guy wires the way you need them to go. Well, there are some limitations with that lot behind Shopko. They could be overcome. It just costs a bit more money. But the bottom line is the city threw out the Nash Park lot. I didn't specifically identify it as the Nash Park lot in here, but it was one of the sites that we looked at originally. We just thought that there was not going to be any chance at all that the city would be interested in that property. They brought it up. So it was their idea, so it was a good idea. So we talked that through a little further, and if you can picture that lot, that's a couple of blocks west of where the 60th Street Tower is right now. It's and the westernmost edge of that, there's no parkland activity there right now. It's just woods and some clearings and things, and so those were the areas that we're looking at. So bottom line is, there's a couple things that would need to happen. For us to put any tower up in the city, there's a limit right now, an ordinance that goes back don't know how long, to 300 feet for any kind of tower, public safety included. The city told us that they were going to work on altering that to move that to 330 or 350 feet for public safety only. So they're actually drafting the ordinance change for that and are working to get that through city council. They figured it would take about 6 weeks. Because that's a piece that we'd have in place, regardless of what site we put it on. And then we made applications to the FAA for both of those lots, just to see, you know, where that goes. Working with our consultant, I asked if it made sense for us to meet with the FAA, because it's a Chicago office, if it makes any sense to meet with them before they render a decision. He said, no, basically they go through a preliminary analysis, and if the lot isn't selected or isn't approved, then you can go through and kind of negotiate stuff potentially for that lot, because there's a number of variables in play. There's height of the tower, and given that this lot is actually about 20 feet elevation-wise higher than the current 60th Street lot, we could potentially shrink that tower if we need to get FAA approval. So there's some things we can play with. Bottom line is it sounded pretty encouraging from the city's standpoint. They were gung-ho, and the people that were there were the city administrator. It was his idea, and Wade Buck, the airport manager, and then Jeff LeBon, and one other guy from city development. So it was kind of all the key administrative folks anyway. So I was very encouraged by that. We've got things into the FAA, and we're just going to keep pushing. I'm hoping that by our next meeting that we'll have a little bit more insight, because it's normally a 30, I guess they've expanded now, it's a 45-day review time the FAA's got, but I'm hoping we'll have it in 30 days, and we'll be able to have some more information by the next meeting.
Here we have two other towers, and this is our worst one. We have another one out in Silver Lake and the one here. And we had studies done on all of them. And this one is the one that they said if we had a ice storm, you know, where you get ice sticking to the metal on there, that we could actually have a large problem. So this is the first one we're addressing. And it entails all of the city's fire, police, the counties, and so it's an important deal. So, are no?
Have they checked out? If I recall, I don't remember which tower was a problem. I don't know if it's the 60th Street Tower or the downtown monopole. But if I recall, the Bristol Water Tower, nobody checked out the visuals between towers, and the Bristol Water Tower ends up to be in the way of the best shot we have. They checked all that out.
Yeah, that was when they put this one up.
Okay.
Back in the early 90s, what they did, I found out, is they shot the elevation from the intersection of 45 and 50, and there's about a 35-foot drop between that intersection and where the tower actually is. So when they first put this up, there was that blockage of that water tower, and that's why that monopole was put up down at the safety building, was to give them enough height to clear things. And actually, thankfully, that monopole was there when we did some of the stuff when we did the safety building, because we moved a lot of stuff off that middle. There's a tower in the center of the public safety building. It's part of the building. It's right in the center of the roof. And that is structurally unsound. Most of the antennas that were on that were mounted like right on the deck level.
I remember that.
Because you couldn't support it up above. That tower we still want to look at potentially decommissioning or strengthening and having as backup for stuff. We haven't done anything with that tower. But yeah, the bottom line is the site.
Both of these sites check out. Somebody
yes.
check that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, from a microwave standpoint, yes.
Any other questions for Ray?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Is the intent with the new potential lot anyways to still use a guy wire tower?
No, it would be self-supporting. Yeah, that was one of the things that they said. It looked like we were going to have to go, if we do end up using that 50th and 52nd lot, we are going to have to go with a self-supporting tower there. And when we talked about that lot with the city, they really were more keen on a self-supporting tower there because they do want to eventually put some trails through that woods for part of the park. And at this point, it's kind of a horse apiece. So,
since they're sharing in it, are they going to help share the cost too?
Historically, all of the towers have been the county's part of the county's infrastructure, so that they haven't shared in the cost. Where they're potentially, like to give you an idea, anything that's taken place downtown at the safety building now, as part of the IGA, the intergovernmental agreement that was signed during the public safety building process, anything that takes place down there on the building or the antennas or anything gets dumped into the fund that gets split between the city and the county. That is not how, like the 60th Street Tower is solely, it's been a county piece of infrastructure. It's been our responsibility over the years. So that's how we're looking at this right now as well. The only thing would be is if we can get them to throw in the land for it, I mean, if that's kind of their contribution. We haven't really talked about that part of things.
A little early for that.
Yeah.
I would think they're going to get some skin in the game here one way or another. At least we ought to hold off for that.
If we can get the property and get it sited, and there's no charge for any of that, that would be a significant, achievement.
Exchange.
I think so, because right now, historically, it's been on our property. Everything's been on our dime, and if we can't work something out with the city, and if that other lot didn't work out, we'd probably be looking at purchasing a piece of property somewhere to do it.
Do they hang their own antennas on that tower?
Yes.
So they have a vested interest in making sure this tower gets put up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So you guys can certainly negotiate a little bit of it. I know it's early, but I just want to
plan to see.
Lay the groundwork, but I would expect them to get some skin in the game. Whether it's a lot and you feel equitable, that's great. But if not, for us in the entire county to bear the entire cost seems a little bit one-sided. That's all. So,
yeah, well, even if we get the city to put some skin in the game, as you say, it doesn't mean they're going to pay you.
Well, that's a different argument.
They haven't paid us yet on anything in the last 4 years. So.
I was, like I say, compared to where we've been, it was a step in, we're making some steps in the right direction. So hopefully we can pull the whole thing together in an equitable kind of manner.
Yeah, it sounds encouraging, and you know, you don't want to bring that in, but you know, that'll be the discussion that'll come along eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll move on to Brookside.
Brookside. Some good news there, too. Actually, some news I just got this morning as well. That's good news. We've worked, again, to give the new folks a little background. Annually, Brookside, the nursing home, gets inspected by the state for the facilities and operations of the building. It's just part of their certification to operate as a nursing home. Usually, when those inspectors come through, they focus on the operations side, the nurses and how they take care of folks and how they track their medicine and all the processes and protocols that go on in the building. Well, this last year, because of a lot of things that have happened in the state, there was an architect that came down as the inspector. So he really didn't necessarily spend a whole bunch of time on the operations side, but he really focused on the building. And as a result, he found a number of things that have existed in the building since day one when it opened. They've been there for 16 plus years, but they were, in his opinion, and upon appeal, some of them were found out to be in violation of some codes. So we were put in a situation where we had to go back and address these issues, even though we've operated a building safely for 16 plus years. So there's two pieces. We addressed, there was probably 16 issues. We got 14 of them pretty well cleared off, no big deal. There was two remaining issues, one of which we appealed and one on a technicality, and that has to do with Brookside, if you go in, it has an acoustic ceiling just like this one. But then above it, as opposed to this ceiling, about 2 feet above it, there's a drywall deck. So basically the walls are drywall, and each room, each individual resident room in the hallway, there's each a little cube of drywall, and then you see this acoustic ceiling. Well, that's done to control smoke and fire in the event of a fire. So there was an issue having to do with this drywall now above here. You don't see it with your eyes, so they didn't properly, all the drywall screws that hold the drywall in place, none of those were mudded over, none of the seams, or few of the seams were taped. Some of them were, but not all of them. So he had an issue with that, and bottom line is he cited that under the wrong statute, and we were able to win that on an appeal. But we know that the next time he comes through, he's just going to recite it, and he's going to make sure that he's got the right site. So that's one issue that we haven't addressed yet. That's one we're going to come back to as soon as we get these other issues resolved, which are up in the attic. Up in the attic, if you've been at Brookside, there's 7 wings. There's kind of a main area where the lunchroom is, and a lot of their support work takes place there. And then there's actually wings that go off of that main building. Well, each of those wings, there's a firewall. You don't see it, but it's built, and it goes from the ground floor all the way up to the top of the roof, into the attic, goes through the attic up to the top of the roof. Well, this guy crawled around up there. I don't know that any of the inspectors ever had, and he found that there's various things that penetrate these smoke walls in each of these five wings, I can't remember how many exactly it is, but there's penetrations. There's HVAC ducting that goes through there, ductwork, there's electrical penetrations, there's truss penetrations for the roof itself. None of that stuff was fireproofed, fire-stopped the proper way. So we went back to the original contractor, even though it was 16 years ago, and fortunately, C.G. Schmidt is coming to the plate, and they're going to do all of the work up there that's required at their cost. They're not charging us for it. The only thing they're going to charge us for is there's some doors, some access doors that penetrate, and those were spec'd wrong at the get-go, and those have to be replaced. We're buying the doors. It's like $2,800 or something like that. But they're labor-wise, they're going to do all that work. And it took us a while to even get to that point because we had to go through the state and get, I wanted to make sure we got approval for what we were going to do up there because it's kind of a gray area on how you do some of this work. I wanted to make sure we had the state buy-in so that when we're done with it, the next inspector comes to me and says, well, you know what, I don't like the way that is. I think you need to do it this way. No, we got it all put together by the construction engineers, by the architect, and signed off by the state. So we're going to do the work up there that will be certified correct by the state. And we met with C.G. Schmidt last Thursday, and they thought it was going to take 2 to 3 weeks. They're actually going to start tomorrow morning. They're going up there tomorrow morning. We've got things coordinated with Fran Petrick, and they're going to start that work. It'll probably take them 2 to 3 weeks to get everything fireproof. But bottom line is we should have everything done up there. And that we have, that one we were cited for yet, and that has to be completed by September 4th. So we should be well ahead of the game. And then once we're done with that, we'll kind of develop a game plan for dealing with what we got to do with drywall-wise above the roof, or above the ceiling. So that's pretty much everything that's going on.
Another important aspect of all that is that this was all inspected by state and city inspector. And no one caught any of this. So whether they're being nice to us now or we're being nice to them, we could go after somebody a lot harder than we've gone after them. because it was inspected by the same state of Wisconsin and by the same city of Kenosha inspectors and passed. And people have been living there for 16 years, grandmothers and grandfathers. And so luckily, this reputable company is doing this on their dime. Supervisor Noble?
This could be just terminology, but I heard you say at their cost, and then you said, no charge to the county. There's a difference. If they're going to do it at their cost, then they may be expecting to charge you their cost instead of a cost plus a profit. So are you sure it's going to be no charge to the county?
No charge to the county. Okay. The only thing that we did was we bought the doors.
I just don't want to have them come up, and we said, well, we would do it for our cost. Our cost means we do it for $20 an hour, not $40 an hour.
No, not at their cost, at no cost to the county. Yeah.
Any other questions?
I can understand the ceiling a little bit with the not taping the scenes if from the smoke infiltration, but you want to try and explain to me why we have to worry about whether it's screwheads or are wanted up. What is this guy saying? This sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a... Believe me, I learned a whole lot more about this than I ever wanted to, but...
Sounds like difficult bureaucracy.
It's a code that's been established and refined over years and years, and there's fire codes involved, federal, there's state codes that take it further, there's... And it all has to do with the fact that if a screw isn't mudded, that actually is, from a heat standpoint... It was explained to me that's going to be the point of failure typically than if there were a fire, because there's a quicker heat transfer between that, because the iron now is coming through or the steel's coming through, that will then heat up quicker and you will compromise basically the fire rating of that room, because that will then enlarge the hole, those pieces will drop. So that's what the risk is. It won't be, without those being mudded over, that it compromises the integrity of that fire shell that's supposed to be there. That's kind of the technical...
In theory,
exactly.
Right, fair enough.
Well, you've had to do that for 30 years in the state of Wisconsin in a home. You know, people that didn't finish their garage, that still all had to be mudded. All the screws, you had to do the joints, a garage to a house.
Yeah, firewall.
Between the house and garage.
Yeah, but not necessarily the ceiling of the garage.
Ceiling also.
Yeah.
If you had living quarters above the garage, but not if you don't.
No. The ceiling had to be drywall.
No, mine's not.
But how long was the house built?
Forever. I mean, if it's a firewall, I understand that's your...
I had my garage rebuilt, added on.
Yeah, I can't see 10 years
ago. You had a rock garage and that. You don't have to
see that. Since the 90s, I think. Okay, thank you. So?
Air handling units, the three units were installed 2 weeks ago. In fact, it was right before Memorial Day weekend, thankfully. And they're all operating. We're still working to dial them in. In fact, if anything, they're a little too cold now in some areas, but we're working on getting the controls dialed in so that units operate at optimum efficiency. But bottom line is we should be able to get through the summer no problem without... And last summer, it was kind of nip and tuck with at least the one unit. It was pretty tough. So those are done.
Chairman? Yes.
I was understanding that one of those units was held up by O'Hare, and they were paying for a crane. How much additional cost was there for that crane until that other unit came in?
There was no additional cost to us. The contractor paid that cost because, they ended up working until about 8:30 that night with the crane. But... That was on their dime.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't to us. Because they actually damaged, that crane did some damage to the pavement as well where they set it, which was really the only place they could set it. I don't think that they had the proper... Yeah, exactly. And so it damaged, they're going to replace that on their dime as well. There's no additional cost to us. So that was that. Parking structure... have got some movement there as well. The bid and plan specs for that wrap-up work were submitted to... this is the parking structure downtown. If you younger folks are familiar with the courthouse, just north of it, there's a multi-story parking structure. It's been open for business since 2006, but there's really a few loose ends. There's supposed to be control gates so for control and access to that building.
The lighting is not really, was not really designed, I don't think, the right way to keep things real efficient energy-wise. And then there's some security issues with the structure, too. So basically, we're working to get those three things resolved. The things that take so long is that building was 90% funded with state and federal money, really federal money, but it's administered by the state. And so everything you do has to get approved by the state, and they have an independent consulting firm they work with that does a pre-approval. So everything takes so long. So we've only got probably $180,000 worth of work, and it's taken us about 2 years to get it now to the point where we're almost ready to bid it out. But it's in the state's hands right now to approve what it is we want to bid for. So we're still on par to, I think, get actual construction started in August and finished for sure by October 1st. That's kind of what we're hoping to do. And then that building. And I hope to bring information to this meeting, but I'm going to have to make it for the July meeting, parking rate information, so we can start to debate that, because that has the potential to be controversial on what we end up charging for that. But I should have enough information to bring that to the committee in July and start to talk about that.
Okay. Mike, quick question. Is it free parking right now?
It's free, and it's actually one of the problems that's happened since we opened that structure. If you're familiar with that area, right by the Metro station itself, all those lots are city-owned, and they charge the Metro folks $30 a month or $35 a month. And one of their complaints has been because we haven't charged for this structure, they've lost a lot of revenue because folks are parking in there for free. And so there needs to be, and actually part of the original grant application, the county was full intent was to charge for parking in that building. It just, without the control gates, it hasn't been effective. We charge for employees or Metro folks that have wanted to rent a spot in there, and there are about 30 designated spots that people can rent on a monthly basis, but we're not controlling access. And so once we get the gates in, we can really, and what I'm hoping is that because there's on any given day 40 to 60 spots open at the Metro lots themselves because they're parking here for free, I'm hoping that we can, if we do things right, some of those folks will migrate back to the Metro lots closer to the station, and it'll free up some space in that parking garage, because one of the things we don't have is we don't have adequate parking for that whole civic campus right now, and if we can flush some folks out of it, it probably will be good.
So the upgrades were the gates, the lights, and the
security system.
Security. And just closed circuit.
The press isn't here, so I can tell you that from day one there's panic alarms, red buttons near the elevators on all those. They're not wired to anything.
They make you feel good because you can see them.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've got a buddy that's an attorney that made a pretty good living at malls that put up fake video cameras that weren't working, and then women got assaulted. So we don't have a good situation there. I'm confident that we're going to have some limited video coverage, and then we're going to have the alarms hitched up. Or I think where we're headed is probably a phone that just goes to dispatch is what's going to happen there. But there's some security in the building anyways. So yeah.
So county employees still use that lot then too, right?
Yeah, county employees, city employees, pretty much anybody, as well as jurors and visitors to the courthouse, civic campus for anything.
And Metro had it worked out.
And Metro folks.
With a city for $30 a month?
I think it's $30 or $35 a month. But part of the intent for getting the funding, it's a CMAQ grant, which is a congestion mitigation air quality thing, is to encourage people to use carpool and use Metro to get to work. So that said, I mean, that still is kind of the primary intent of that thing, is to support the Metro folks, and we can do that, but we also can charge for it too.
Sure.
And that's the part that we haven't done really. So
have you given any consideration at all on rate structure?
The only thing that we've talked about, and right now we've got engineered in, because my concern, one of my big concerns with having gates on there, everybody's been in a hotel or whatever where the damn gate hasn't opened up, and the line's backing up trying to get out of the hotel or whatever. We're not going to have the maintenance staff or the police staff to work. So what we've looked at doing is, it's going to be access in is where you're going to get charged. automatic access out, so there's no holdups. Access in will be a flat rate. So if you're coming and you're a Metro guy or you're a county employee, you use this thing, you get into the building. If you are a member of the public that's just coming here and you got court that you got to go to, it's a flat rate. Whatever that flat rate is, it's a one charge. You take your credit card. It's a cashless thing. So we tried to simplify it as much as we could so that we can avoid maintenance things. We can avoid paper cards for costs going forward. Jurors, if there's a juror, they're going to have a card that times out for... For jurors, we came up with a code. There's going to be a keypad there. If they've got a code that's good for 3 days if they're on jury duty, they punch in their code. At the end of 3 days, that comes out of the system. It's no longer valid to get in the building. So we tried to engineer something that's going to be simple and easy to maintain going forward and hopefully doesn't cause a lot of hardship for folks getting in and out of there.
How about restricting entrance through the exit?
Mike, we'll talk about this when we get to this.
Okay.
I mean, once we get to the discussion on this, that's no need for discussion on it tonight. Anything else on the parking structure?
That's pretty much it.
So we'll move on to new business highway.
Basically, for highways, Gary put together a report that just updates really on the big projects right now, and that's what I handed out a little earlier. Highway K from 31 to the first set of railroad tracks, that project has been awarded. It doesn't include the railroad crossing. I was waiting to hear back from Gary. I believe that the railroad crossing costs are covered by the railroad, if I remember correctly.
They are.
And that's just our piece, or I should say, it's mainly funded with outside county dollars. But construction's anticipated to start June 25th. So roughly the 25th is when 60th Street is going to be closed from 31 to Highway H. So as an access, a means of access or egress out of the city, that's going to be shut down. I know Gary's working on scheduling another meeting with Kenosha Unified, Pat Finnemore, the facilities guy, to coordinate as we get towards the later part of summer, the logistics for them to get in and out of the schools there. But that's when that project's going to actually start, is that week of the 25th.
How does it happen that it seems like in the construction season you always have, so now we're going to have K under construction and shut down, and Highway 50 is going to be down to one lane. I mean, how do we always work these things out so that we have roads going in the same direction down in the same year? I don't quite figure out how we can't.
Multiple jurisdictions. Yeah, that's the state decided to do the Highway 50 resurfacing project. I'll say somewhat out of the blue, because as you know, Highway 50 is scheduled to be completely reconstructed into multiple lanes in, multiple lanes out. Frontage roads, that's like a 2018 project, I want to say.
So they're not doing that now?
No, this is just a resurfacing.
See, I thought this was the big one.
No, this is not the big one. This is just the resurfacing. Yeah.
But that really grinds on the traveling public when, we did the same thing happened with, I can't remember, a couple years ago, K was shut down. You couldn't get under a K when we were, when they were doing the interstate,
mm-hmm.
and you couldn't get under at
C was shut
C
down at the same
K.
time.
Yeah.
Yep. Again, those are state projects for the interstate. So our ability to control some of that scheduling is, I won't even say limited at best. It's pretty much non-existent. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Now, the one thing is, when we get down to the Highway 50, there is some things they're doing to minimize some of that. They are trying to do lane closures at night. But I'll get to that in a sec. Highway G, 30th Avenue, from 18th Street to 15th Street, those bids were open just last week, or the week before, actually. Bid documents are being evaluated. Construction contract is expected to be awarded in the next week or so. Right-of-way acquisition is nearly complete. Expect that to start about the week of the 25th or June 25th as well. Highway C and MB, the intersection right over here, for a roundabout there. And I know we just had another accident there last week. I think there was another bad one. Final plans and specs are complete. Right-of-way acquisition is underway currently. Advertising for bids next week and the week after. And I had a question to Gary. I'm not sure why that split, if there's two pieces to that project. But the bids are opened on the 29th and anticipate awarding it the week of 4th of July with a pre-construction meeting the week of July 16th and 20th. Anticipated construction is August 1st for that to go into a roundabout. And then the last big project is Wisconsin Highway 50 resurfacing work scheduled to start Monday, June 4th. You've seen the flashing signs on Highway 50. They've had them out for a week or two now. Closures listed below are scheduled to continue until late June. Anticipated lane closures, that last sentence there, after July 1st will occur overnight. So June is going to be fairly messy, but since the K-work won't start till kind of the last week in June, they're trying to get as much done as they can where it's down to one lane on Highway 50 before July 1st, so that at least going forward into the rest of the summer, the nighttime is when they're going to be closing most of the going down to one lane on Highway 50. So that's, I think, their feeble attempt at trying to manage the situation as best they can. But that's why I believe that's why they did that, because Gary did push back on them pretty hard.
So where is that?
Yeah, Dennis, probably a dumb question, but I'm new supervisor. On the county roads, the cost for construction, what is that? Who pays for that? Do we get help with that, or was that $2,310,878.72? Is that divided up, or do we pay it all?
It depends on the project. This one is not 100% county funded. This one, there is some other dollars involved, because I know the state was involved. The exact breakdown of what percentage is us and them, I don't know that Gary could answer that off the top of his head. I just don't know that level of detail. But I know that there are some other dollars involved, because there was a whole bunch of approvals that had to go through the state, and I believe that section of the road is being built to state or federal specifications, which also drives up the cost. So there are certain parts, there are certain roads that are straight up county roads that we repair or construct, and they're to our specifications, and those are 100% on us.
What about the roundabout?
A roundabout, same thing. I believe there's some state funding involved in that as well, but not much. That one's primarily a county project. I can make sure that Gary gets the exact breakdown on the percentages for the next meeting, because, like I say, he'd know that off the top of his head. I just don't know that level of detail.
Thank you, Ray.
So, we will move on to new business parks.
John O'Port.
Okay. The first thing we need to discuss is the memo for the Brandale Wastewater Treatment Plant. And this is an annual report that I have to do every year, which is really the report card for the little sewage treatment plant we have at Brightondale Golf Course that services the park and the golf course. We're kind of lucky because we don't serve a community like a normal sewage treatment plant, so we get by with a lot less reporting and other things. Anyways, our grades again, everybody got this in their packet? This is just a summary page of a 22-page report, but it basically goes through and we set 4.0 for everything, and it grades us on stuff like what we do with the solids out of the treatment plant itself once we pump them out. That's said a lot of it. How well the effluent is treated and leaves the plant. It goes through right down to making sure that we're adequately staffed, and the certification requirements of all the operators. And again, you can't do any better than 4.0, and I think that a lot of that credit goes to Rich Heinisch, the operator in the golf division who operates it up at Brightondale. I think he does a very good job with it. Everything there is operating good, and if anybody has any questions about the plant, I'd be more than happy to answer them. Or if you'd like to see the full report.
Any questions? If not, John, we'll move on to your division report.
Okay, Memorial Day was Monday was probably the best Memorial Day I've ever seen out on the West End, specifically Silver Lake Beach. I don't know if it was the hot weather or what, but both Sunday and Monday, we had probably record crowds for a Memorial Day weekend. We did have swimmer's itch at Silver Lake. Usually that occurs right where there's a water temperature, right when the water is warming up, where that little parasite gets active. The easiest, best thing you can do for that is either rinse off with water or else dry off right away when you come out of the lake. We did put out a hose and we put out signs so folks knew about it, but I still did get some calls of folks telling me that, you know, they got a big infection from being out there. It looks like mosquito bites. It's just like heck, which is really the parasite burrows into you and dies and really doesn't adversely affect you at all. Just it itches and usually just a little calamine lotion and you're okay.
Used to be the June itch, but now it was the May itch.
Pardon?
It used to be called the June itch.
Yeah.
But now things are so early.
Warm, yeah.
Yeah.
All the new playground equipment is in. If you're driving around, we didn't get a lot at Silver Lake. We did get a merry-go-round over there and an orbiter. At Silver Lake, we got two orbiters, or at Fox River, I'm sorry. At Paddock Lake, we got a new ship climber, a merry-go-round, and a climbing boulder. At Pets, we've got the tot lot, a replacement swing set, two merry-go-rounds, and a climbing boulder, and I guess that's about it. But if you get a chance to see that, the biggest share of it's right at Area 4, the heaviest used playground at Pet Frank Springs. The climbing boulder over there at Pets, when it's on a Saturday or a Sunday, usually it's just covered with kids. The one out here, I haven't been by the one by Spencer Field when there's been a ball game going on, but I know I went by there the other night just prior to it, and there was three ball players standing on top of it.
So we've got one at Spencer Field?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to look when I go back.
Yeah. The Pets Roadway parking lot reconstruction and the dam removal bridge construction projects are on hold right now for review because of the historical significance of the little footbridge by the dam area, but they are on the desk there, and we've been told that both of those should be reviewed and off of their desks by probably the end of June, and then the Corps of Engineers will grant the final permits that we need to start both projects. We are hoping that the roadway and parking lot project starts first. They were reviewing that one right away, so hopefully we're looking at maybe being able to get started on that yet here in June. You know, we're running a little behind, but we, from what we originally predicted, but we didn't expect to snag with the Historical Society. Silver Lake Trail, I guess where the consultant is working on the bridge design. Everything there is going along real well. I was going to give you a tentative schedule, which I left on my desk. Jeff Yerson had it printed, so you needed a huge magnifying glass to read it, so I had him blow it up. I can provide you with that. So that's going good. Update on the Powers Lake construction property purchase. The resolution was passed to submit for a stewardship grant. The grant request is in. We should hear something verbally around June 25th on whether we will be the recipients of a grant for that property. So we're keeping our fingers crossed until then. The other thing I have is that Doc Harris out here at Paddock Lake stepped forward and wrote a check for $12,500 for the dog parks, which is what was agreed on to purchase naming rights of the dog parks. The Doc Carlisle bought the naming rights for the one at Bentonville Springs, and Warren Close purchased the rights for the one out by Twin Lakes for the Warren Close Bark Park. And now Doc Harris has done this. I will have to do a resolution in order to bring that forward in order to do the naming. And he is going to just call it the Harris Family Dog Park. That's just something real basic. So.
I just gave him $108 this morning, so that's good.
Well, he did say it's in recognition of all his customers and everything else.
I gave him $2,200 last time.
Is that a lifetime naming, or is it 50-year, 99-year? Lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the life of the dog park.
There's the Warren Close Dog Park, and then the Carlisle family.
Really family, no.
And then this will be the pedigree.
Mike? Is there a deadline for the Historical Society to get back to you? Or is this one of these things?
No. Yes and no.
Yeah, we're basically riding them, because that's all we can do. And I don't think... What surprised us on this is because the Army Corps got involved in some of this stuff that Gary's been familiar with. He's never seen him involved, but they've kind of taken a more active role because the perception in Washington is that the state DNR is kind of defanged. And so the Army Corps, evidently, we got this confirmed now. This was kind of our suspect.
Our DNR?
Yeah.
Defanged?
Well, this is I'm using the words now from federal people that we're talking to. They evidently, the Army Corps always had these authorities and powers, but they never used them. So they are now stepping in. We met with them. I was shocked at all the additional red tape that we had to go through. And so now that they're involved, this one level, they've approved some stuff, but this one level having to do with the historical piece, they're the ones that kind of open the can, they pull the stuff out, and then they say, okay, historical folks at the state, you guys analyze this, and then you let us know what you think. So then it's got to go back to the Army Corps, and then the Army Corps, I think, typically takes what they say as gospel and go forward with it, but that's where it's at right now. So it's in, we got a confirmation last week, we actually contacted Sam Kirkman to try to work the levers up there. She got a confirmation that the guy moved it up in his pile on his desk, and that was last Wednesday, so I told John just today that we'll give him till Wednesday, and then we'll call up there again, and you just got to keep pushing.
And
that's all you can do.
For the footbridge.
Yeah, the footbridge. So there's two issues. They're looking at the roadway itself, although there was no... They did archaeological digs. They didn't find a single thing. So that should be a rubber stamp of them saying there's nothing there. Boom, go ahead, Army Corps. That's what should happen. The other one, the bridge itself... they deemed that to have historical significance, so now it's just a matter of figuring out what their mitigation request is going to be. It could be as simple as taking some photos of it and putting them up in the History Center downtown. Could be as far as the other end of the spectrum, disassembling the footbridge and reassembling it somewhere else in the park. I mean, it's kind of that thing. You don't know where it's going to fall.
And
so
they would, let's say they go that far extreme, does that cost fall upon the county?
It would if we decided to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. So
is there a way to? I'm just trying to.
Yeah, I'm not sure myself, okay. Mike. We're going to have to kind of.
And the parking lot and all that—that's just kind of repaving, right? We're not talking about putting a new roadway in, right?
No, it's redoing what's there, refreshing what's there.
Okay. Thank you.
And I just want to report too. You know, we did hire a concessionaire to operate the Silver Lake concession stand. Real good. Couple husband and wife team out there. Food's real good. So far, everything's going real well with them as far as cooperation and everything else. So
Where are they from?
Somewhere in Walworth.
Really? Mm-hmm. Good deal. So, any other questions for
you? No, the Prigo Nature Center didn't give me anything, so.
They're usually pretty good, though. We'll get them next one. We'll move on to new business golf.
Things are going really well in golf for us. We've had great sales due to the weather and due to the golf course conditioning and the continuing promotional activities that we've been doing. Both revenue and rounds are up. The last couple of weeks have been very encouraging. We had a great Memorial Day weekend this last weekend. Very, very good. We've been extremely fortunate that the Red 9 is open. We have the White Birch Irrigation and Cart Path project happening, and we would be nowhere close to where we are financially right now if that Red 9 was gone. So we're extremely, extremely fortunate that we've had that property to use, because, you know, right now we've been closing a 9 at a time for the irrigation for the paving projects, and we're able to go have the blue spruce open, and we're able to go from the red to the white front nine or the white back nine and having 36 holes out there, and that's one of the reasons for our good fortune right now. The food and beverage is doing great. You can read the report there. I mean, we're up over $147,000. That's the sales so far, up over $43,000 over last year in food and beverage and merchandise sales. We've done 650 fish fries. Everybody's been really, raving about the food, the new grill and griddle and deep fryers that we put in at Brightondale. Everybody is really enjoying the menus. So the revenue per round is jumped considerably, went up 84 cents at Brightondale, and it went up 74 cents at Petrifying Springs. So, I mean, things are really going well with the food and beverage. We're still developing the RFP so that we are able to go forward with that. There's many detailed issues that will have to be investigated with that RFP, so we're still working on that. The White Birch Irrigation Project is proceeding. The company that we've hired is more of a residential and commercial property rather than a golf course irrigation company, and so we're having a little bit of issue with them, but they have finished the front nine. We're finishing up the work on the back nine. It should be done by Father's Day weekend. We will, at the end of the project, have 16 out of 18 holes of new irrigation on the White Birch. So there still will be two holes that aren't done, but we will have a much better water system on the White Birch, so that's great. We've been receiving outstanding reviews on the golf course conditions. I mean, I just had my assistant Jeff stop me today, and he says, "Dan, we did 454 rounds on Saturday, and I can't tell you how many people come up to me all the time and just tell me how nice the course has never been in better shape. The greens are rolling really fast. All the members are saying, I've been a member here for 30 years. I've never seen the golf course in this kind of condition." So they've really been raving about that system or that conditions at both Petrifying Springs and Brightondale. Currently, we're finishing up the paving project. We have had the delay this week. We thought we'd be done tomorrow. Now it'll go into next week. We will be using the work crew to do the grading on the sides of the cart paths and then seeding that area. We also have the roofing project at the Petrifying Springs Maintenance Shop that'll be starting next Monday. The calendar of events continues to grow, and we're doing email blasts every week or sometimes twice weekly. We have over 7,800 addresses in our database alone, plus the county database, so we're emailing into about 9,000 people every time we do an email blast. I hope that you guys are all getting the email blasts. Our next big initiative is we're offering free clinics to non-golfers. And at Petrifying Springs, it's going to be Tuesday nights from 6 to 7 at Brightondale, Sunday afternoons from 3 to 4. I'm very excited about this. The PGA has brought together an initiative called Golf 2.0. And, they say there's 90 million golfers out there just wanting to play, either that have played in the past, that want to come back, or new people that have expressed an interest to play. And this is an initiative that we came up with that it's just to introduce the clubhouses, the scorecards, the golf cars, the set of golf clubs, how to use them, just to remove the intimidating factor of starting a new sport, removing the fear factor for people that don't know anything about it. I think it could be big. Kenosha, I met with Kenosha News today. They're going to do an article about it either tomorrow or Wednesday. It starts this Sunday at Brightondale, and then Tuesday night at Petrifying Springs. So I hope it goes over real well. I hope that, I feel it's one of our core mission statement goals is to create more players, not only for us, but for the surrounding golf courses, and I really hope that it works well.
Yes, sir.
You made 454 rounds of golf. Is it for both of them, or?
One day at Brightondale Links.
I'm sorry?
One day at Brightondale Links. Yep.
What do you mean by rounds? Is it nine holes or?
It's a start. it's just a start. You know, you got a player that comes, you come for 18 holes, I come for 9, that's 2 starts. Doesn't matter, you know, what you play. It's just a start. But different individuals.
That's a good weekend.
Yep. That's it. That was one day. That was Saturday. Yep.
What about our pets?
Pets, it was 232 that day. You know, pets can go, you know, up to about 300. We've had last week, you know, we have done 301 rounds one day last week at Petrifying Springs, and Brightondale can get up to, you know, in the 600s, you know, so. But anywhere 400 and above is a good day at Brightondale. Anywhere 250 and above is a real good day at Petrifying Springs.
The other question that I have is it's about the red course there. I don't know, maybe we can get an update on what was going on, because I know there was some discussion with the previous
one. Yeah, we're going to have to get into that. And there was a recommendation, and this committee, just like we'll be looking at that Katy Park, the recommendation was that next year that red nine was closed. So we're going to have to look at what's going on here this year, what the numbers are in the fall, and then this committee is going to have to decide.
So there was nothing decided pretty much from the previous
committee. The funding for the red nine was in the 2012 budget. But the recommendation of the committee was that it was closed for 2013.
Okay.
Yep.
So that will be coming up probably for the next budget?
We've got to do it this summer, though.
Yeah.
We've got to decide. And now when you hear some of the things Dan says about having that open, I mean, that's going to be part of our discussion. You know, it helped them now that it was open while they're doing the construction on the other, and the golf course is up, you know. Eventually the golf course is going to start making money again. We just have to know when. But no, that's a big thing for this committee this summer. Probably the most public thing is going to be what we do with that revenue.
Right.
Yep. So we're the noble.
I saw that behind you, you've got the three options up. First of all, it was up for discussion to close the red nine this year. And you've commented twice on how beneficial it was financially for us not to have closed it, but I think you should put some money, get an estimate of what that benefit was if we're going to talk about that this summer. This committee should know, and now I'm on the committee. When I wasn't on the committee, I spoke at citizens' comments against closing the Red Nine. I personally think it's idiotic with all the baby boomers emerging into the leisure world, and we're going to shut down a nine-hole course. It's like, what are we thinking? You know. But the other thing I want to talk about, or at least let others know, and maybe I did miss last week, and maybe it was discussed a little bit. But there's no option four up there, and I've always said that with these emerging baby boomers, we ought to be doing something to market, you know, to get our share of that particular golfer, you know, this basically the future senior citizens. And I came up somehow with the thought that, you know, we probably do need to have a better driving range out there, and maybe a, you know, reconfigure the practice facility. But I thought that we should have a six-hole course, so that if you're a relatively, you know, not only if you're going to go out there with your family, if you take your, I would imagine if you take your kids out there, 9 holes is a little, it's hard to keep young kids' interest for 9 holes. If you're going to go out there as a senior citizen, I'd rather, you know, promote a fish fry and, you know, 6 holes of golf for the price of 9. And now I'll probably buy a few more drinks, and, you know, the county will make some money. It'll be an option that nobody else will have out there. So I understand there is, it's not on the list, but I understand you have been thinking about this option number four, right?
Yeah. Basically, the options, the way I understand it currently that we have out there, is number one is to continue to operate it the way we have, you know, and reconfigure the driving range with as the master plan was presented in the past, with changing number one red with the driving range. That's option one. Option two is to reconfigure the practice area, including a 3 or 6 hole practice range. And then option three is to shut it down. You know, those are the three options that are out there.
And you are going to bring forward an option four at some point, though, what I just talked about, a 6 hole.
Well, that's option two.
Option two is a 3 or
well,
a 6 hole.
Well, that's three. I don't think three does anything for anybody.
Well, those were put together in January or February this year as part of that PowerPoint summary that we did. That was kind of a response to Supervisor Rose's request. That was kind of a meeting in February. So the basic concepts that Dan just outlined, those are the three options. So I wouldn't say those three that he just described are exactly what you got in your hand there, Doug. Those are from that PowerPoint that we gave to the committee back in January. Yeah, those ones that are up there, we're working on the ones that Dan just framed out.
Well, what I don't like about the three practice, because that implies strictly practice, I'm thinking 6 holes where you can actually charge somebody, like I just said. Something that we're going to try to market to the baby boomers, which is the biggest group of senior citizens ever that's going to emerge into the leisure world.
And at the last meeting, we just touched on this a little bit, the Wadsworth group we had mentioned. This is exactly what they do. They're a private organization. It's from the Wadsworth Golf Construction Company. It's the three generations of golf course construction in one of the Chicago suburbs. They've started a fund basically because they, and it's a 501c3 type organization, but they've started that, the family started that, with the sole goal being to develop more players in the game. Their thought is that as an industry, there's good training for the people right out of the box, and then they get turned on to a full 9 or 18 hole course, and there's nothing in between, and the industry loses too many golfers, because for them to go from here to here without some kind of bridge, the golfers get lost. So they want those 3 and 6 hole courses. That's what they specifically fund as an organization. They give $150,000 if they approve of a 3 hole.
Or 6.
I thought the 6 was $250,000.
No, that's 9.
9 gets $250,000? Okay, so there's 3 and 6 are eligible for $150,000 in funding. The 9 holes are $250,000 in funding that this organization is with that goal in mind. So we're actually working with our architect that we've been working with, Lohman, for the last couple of years. They're actually paid by Wadsworth to do these initial conceptual plans for a 3 or a 6 hole course. That's what they're working on right now for that particular option.
So anyways, I spoke to the last committee. I want everybody on this committee to know exactly where I stand on this, and I'll be doing whatever I can to promote, definitely not
and
closing it down.
If I can just add one more thing, you know, in the CIP budget, we will be asking for funds for the blue spruce 18 holes. I mean, the irrigation is just as bad on the blue spruce as it was on the white birch, so it does need to be, taken care of. The cart paths, again, are the worst thing about the golf course, you know, not having them paved. So we will be asking next year for the same funding that we asked for this year to do the white birch for the blue spruce next year. So we'll be in the same boat next year if we don't have the red,
in full operation.
In full operations, you know, while we do the construction on the blue spruce. So, you know, that's where it'll be.
Well, we'll put it on our agenda for not July, but probably for August.
August, I think, would be probably realistic, I think. Yeah.
And then for next month, and then for the upcoming, Brad went up, you know, set aside 15 to 20 minutes for the Phoenix Park discussion. So we'll put that on.
We'll talk beforehand how you want that to go.
Yeah, we'll put it on each agenda. It might take 10 minutes, 15, but I want everybody to read through those materials, you know, visit out there, come up with some ideas. And we've got a wide open canvas on that. We can do whatever we want, you know. So it's up to us, and it's up to the people that have given us recommendations but it's actually up to us to represent the taxpayers and the people that we know that will utilize the area. So, Mike?
Couple questions. Regarding the food and beverage RFP, can you explain a little bit to the committee, because I'm just not familiar, what's the intent of that?
The intent of that is to, the only way that we're able to offer alcoholic beverages besides a malt beverage is to lease out the entire food and beverage operation. We feel that we lose outings and we lose participation on the golf courses because we cannot serve alcohol. So the idea is to go out with an RFP to see if we can find somebody that would come in and operate the food and beverage operations at the facilities, especially Brightondale, would be able to offer more outings and offer alcoholic beverages to our golfers.
Okay. And you specifically Brightondale, but are you including pets in it?
We will, that's where the many details and the issues that have to, Brightondale is kind of set up to have a bar the way that the food and beverage area is. Pets, we would almost have to totally reconstruct the food and beverage area to offer alcohol because it's really compact and it's really tight. So, you know, yes, we will find out if there's interest in doing petrifying springs, but that is some things that we'll have to research and figure out if indeed we want to offer it there too.
And I concur with that. However, we're already into June. When will this be done?
This will be done this month.
Okay. And you have an outline that you follow with regards to the content, the RFP, and where it's targeted at and how it's structured?
Not yet. No, we're working on that right now.
Okay. So it's in?
Yep.
So will we have that completed or ready to go by the next committee meeting? Because that's a month from now. And that's July.
I don't think so.
I was going to say, I think that our intent is to get that fleshed out as an RFP. If we were to do it, it wouldn't actually go into effect till next golf season.
Okay.
We wouldn't do it this season.
Okay.
So the goal would be to get, because there's really a lot of legal quirks and stuff that we have to work through in putting this RFP together. I think if we have it together by August 1st, we're going to be in good shape if we get it
together. Oh, that's fine. Yeah. I thought the intent was to try and capture some this season.
No.
Okay. And then, two holes remaining in the white course. Is there any irrigation on them? Are they just going to be the red-headed stepchild? What are we going to do?
Yeah, there's irrigation on them. The fairway heads were replaced last year already on those, but we just didn't have enough money in the budget to do all 18. So, we will help limp them along until we're planning on adding that to what we need to do next year on the blue and then doing the whole thing.
Tie that into that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
The whole idea on the sales for liquor was about 10 years ago, 7 years ago. Finally, I think 6 years ago, I got beer. There was a big obstruction against the county doing anything like that. And we still have to walk on eggshells with local businesses. There was pushback from the county executive because he got a lot of heat from Bristol Oaks and some of the locals. There's people that don't think the county should be in the business that private people are in. I have been one of them for years. I'm a landscaper and the county sells trees cheap, you know. So we have to really watch what we do in this golf operation. But if you decide you're going to be in a golf operation, that's when I said 6 years ago, and there was a lot of Doug was around and everybody was fighting against it, we finally sold beer, and we made $75,000 the first year selling beer. But there's a lot of people that have their not only outings but their leagues, and you get a guy to stick around. And now we've got the new kitchen facilities. You get them to eat and have a cocktail. A lot of people don't want to drink beer. So the first thought was, so there wasn't big pushback, was to get a local. Like, the only local in Brighton is Jenny's. See if they'd like to operate. But you have to put it out to RFP. So
yep.
You have to let everybody have a shot. But, I mean, that would be the ideal thing, if a local business wanted to operate. Bristol Oaks wanted to operate, they could operate. But, I mean, that's where this all started, just so people know. Have you had something?
No. Okay. Well, the only thing is that some of these things that we're putting off until August, I think we vote on the budget in September.
October.
In October, okay.
These guys need time. Government takes time.
Yeah.
They're slow at what they do.
Yeah, sure.
No, but, I mean, we've been talking about this, and actually that talk about the RFP, we knew this year we couldn't get it done.
Okay.
It's still a good idea. Anything else?
First thing is, Mr. Chairman, for next month, July 2nd is the Monday. That's the week of the 4th. I don't know the committee's vacation situation. I know that I'm going to be gone, which isn't a big deal. There's other guys that are going to be here. But I just wondered if it made sense to move that to the 9th would be the next, would be the Monday after that. And I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I wanted to throw it out there for committee discussion.
It makes no difference to me. With preference to anybody?
I'll be gone.
You'll be gone
on the 9th?
Yeah. No.
I'll be gone that first week of July.
The second, you'll be gone?
Yeah.
Why don't we move to the 9th?
Yeah, good idea.
We have the Pringle Nature Center, too. That's our annual meeting. We go to the Pringle Nature Center just so that the committee can become familiar with what's going on. They like to kind of showcase what they're doing because a number of years ago, there wasn't much going on out there, and they really have done a lot in the last few years.
You see where there's fist fights and stuff out of that. the youth of governance, are you guys from the city?
Yeah, I live in the middle of Kenosha. I'm actually really close to Gateway Technical College right there.
Okay, so Pringle Nature Center is a county park, not well known. And it was donated, the land was donated by the Pringle family, who are farmers out there. There's a nature center that's not profit and the county supports. So it's on Highway MB, just off of C. So when you get your agenda, it'll say our meeting. Just remember that our next meeting is at that Pringle Nature Center. So what you would do if you take 94 to C, and then left on MB?
It's inside of a, what's the name of that? Bristol Woods.
Bristol Woods.
Bristol County. Woods. Yeah.
Inside of a county park.
Or otherwise, it's going to be one of these guys driving around, I don't know where they're going. And they said, it's so I'm late, I was out so late looking for the park.
If you got any questions, just give the Public Works a call.
Okay. Hi. It's an interesting place, and the people that operate the Pringles, they're all volunteers, and they'll be there.
Do they get the mailing on the Pringles Center that shows all the events that goes on? Recently, we got a mailing from them.
It should be in our. It should have been in our packet here, but they didn't have it.
Oh, I have one.
I'll get it. Anything else? Not motion or adjournment?
For the next meeting, could we get a list of all the properties, maybe with an update on what's going on, which one is vacant?
Which is what?
Which one is vacant, or like the building where, for instance, where Corporation Council was, that's vacant.
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh,
gotcha.
So we can have a list of all the county-owned properties.
Sure.
And pretty much.
You mean not the all the tax-deeded ones we got?
Not the tax-deeded ones, yeah. Just
we do that. I mean, we got enough papers. So just the property owned.
Sure.
And the other question that I have is, have we the overseeing committee for the security over at the courthouse, or is that judiciary law?
Well,
it's us.
It's us.
There is a committee that meets monthly that the judges run there, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so overall, yes, the security system that's in the courthouse is the same one that's out here. It's part of the countywide, not the airline and, you know, metal detector thing,
that's
but the building
talking,
security.
I was talking about the metal detector. Is that
with
the overseeing committee?
Well,
originally it was done by the county board chairman and the county board. You know, but so there was no committee that did it. But I would say the oversight for the building is this committee.
Mm-hmm. Was it, I remember, I believe, I don't know if it's still in effect, like the attorneys who go through without going through the metal.
Right, there is some, I've heard controversy, it's been in practice for I don't know how long, but yeah, there's attorneys that got privileges, and I don't know if the judges passed that. I can find out what the practice is right now, and at least bring that to the committee so that everybody knows.
Have you heard of a problem?
Well, always had the problem, to be honest with that.
Pardon?
Always had the problem with that, giving the attorneys the privilege, and then nobody else is getting. The people working there, they got to go through the system. Attorneys are exempt.
I haven't heard of a problem, so I
can find out at least what the practice is right now on how it works, and then bring that to the committee. Cause to be honest, I'm not clear. It's been in place for so long.
2004.
I agree.
2004. Yeah,
was it 2005
at the latest. I remember exactly.
Move to adjourn.
Second. Move to second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone.